Welcome to the Clemson Drone Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Burgett from Clemson University. Join me as I dive into the world of drone technology and explore its impact through the eyes of industry leaders. Hear how drone technology directly supports public agencies, private companies, and entrepreneurs from those leading the innovation. If you're a seasoned UAS program manager or just getting into the game, this is a place to learn from the best to help your program soar to new heights. Make sure you subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss a single episode of the Clemson Drone Podcast. At Clemson Drone, the sky is not the limit, it's just the beginning. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Clemson Drone Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Berge with Clemson University, and I'm very excited to have another leader in the UAS space to talk with us. If you've listened to past shows, you may have picked up that a lot of my UAS research with Clemson is on the civil side, specifically with helping state DOTs with their drone program. Well, on today's show, we're in the same market, but on the other side of the table. I'm joined by Tyler Mills of HW Lochner. Lochner is a Chicago-based engineering firm providing consulting services in the surface transportation, rail, and aviation markets. They have 35 offices spreading from Washington State to Miami and from Los Angeles to Massachusetts and everything in between. Tyler is a roadway design engineer out of the Lexington, Kentucky office and is also the chair of their Drone Technology Community of Practice Committee. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me.
All right. Very good. Well, let's go ahead and get into it here. We're going to get into Lochner and talk about drones in a second. But before we get there, can you start off by telling us a little bit about you? Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? Where'd you work when you were out of school?
Sure. Yeah, I've lived in Kentucky my whole life. Started off in the mountains in eastern Kentucky, and before moving to more central Kentucky, kind of going into high school, and I've just stayed in the area ever since. So went to University of Kentucky for civil engineering on the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet Scholarship Program. So I went to UK and got my bachelor's in civil, and then interned with KYTC in their construction offices while I was in school. Out of school, went right to work with the transportation cabinet, did a rotation through some of their services for a year, and settled into highway design. And once I got my PE there, after about 5-6 years with state government, I decided to make a move and landed here at Lochner, and I've been with Lochner about 6 years now, so in the private sector and really enjoying it.
Yeah, and I always have to kind of remind people, because this is something I just learned, Kentucky doesn't have a DOT, it has a transportation cabinet, so a little unique there. Okay, and I did a little bit of an overview about what Lochner does, and you did a little bit there too, but could you kind of dive into a little bit more about what Lochner is and the services they provide, and then specifically what you do? What is your discipline and what you do with Lochner?
Yeah, Lochner has primarily been transportation focused. So it started off in Chicago in the mid-1900s. Transportation planning was the main deliverable. And ever since, they've added more service lines, but it's still transportation focused. Primarily, our clients are DOTs, municipalities. So in Kentucky, in Lexington, it's fairly rural. So KYTC, all the effort and funding is mostly going to support the highway network we have here. There are some transit lines in the urban centers, but primarily rural highway connections. So in the Lexington market, we cover Kentucky and Tennessee, actually, for Lochner for design services. So my role has mostly been a roadway designer. I'm getting into some project management. So roadway widenings, cross-country connections, traffic signals, those sort of things here for Lochner.
Right. Perfect. Okay. Well, so now we had a chance to talk a little bit before the show, so I got to hear a little bit about this. But Lochner's early days with drones were a little unique. Can you talk to us a little bit about what those early days look like with your drone program, if we can really call it a program per se, and what it looked like before Lochner had fully embraced the technology?
Yeah, so the early days, it definitely was not a program. It was a few individuals scattered across the country. So we got into it here in Lexington. We had already started into the photogrammetry world with some visualization projects to support the transportation work we were doing for some public outreach. So I would say 5 years ago, I started getting into photogrammetry using manned aircraft. Mm-hmm. And after a large project, we were trying to find a way to scale that down to all of our projects that we could use. So decided to get into drones. Somebody said, hey, can somebody learn how to fly a drone? And I said, yeah, that sounds fun. I'll do that. Mm-hmm. So that was about 3 years ago. So I bought my own personal drone. And then I started asking questions of, surely somebody else in Lochner's already doing this. I found that there were like five of us at the time.
Right.
And we had never talked before.
Right.
But everybody was using their own equipment. It was just individuals who were very interested in trying to figure it out and learn how to apply it. But there was an agreement. We had drafted an agreement with Lochner that we could use personal equipment and rent it back as like an extra fee on the time for us to personally incur, you know, the risk of building up our personal fleet to use on the project. So it was really, I want to say, an entrepreneurial type, just a group of motivated individuals. And Lochner was accommodating. You know, they weren't ready to fully invest, but they created an opportunity for us to still try to use it and make it work.
Yeah, that is a super cool way of going about it. I mean, again, it's not stifling creativity and innovation. It wasn't something at that time they were willing to invest in, but they saw that they were those that were. And provided some incentive structure to explore. Wow, that's a little bit of a unique way of going about, but I'm envious. There's a lot of things that are like that I think I and others would be interested in or would like if our employers would kind of back it and follow a similar path. So talk a little bit about how Lochner made that transition from that informal consumers of drone data to what they have today in a more formalized program.
Yeah, so the first step was I can't remember who approached who, but eventually the pilots and our corporate leadership kind of got to the same table and tried to chart a path forward. So we formed a small committee, three or four of us pilots, and drafted what a flight operations manual would look like for Lochner and tried to develop, you know, what a potential business model could look like. Like what would be the pros of Lochner staying invested in this, and what would be the, you know, return of investment if Lochner chose to fully invest and start funding equipment and expanding pilots? How would that scale and how would that support our offices? So I would say 2 years ago, we formed a small committee, about three, four of us. And after about 6 months, we expanded, we cast the net out and tried to gather all the pilots. Turns out at the time we probably had 12 Part 107, remote pilots in the company. Mm-hmm. So we gathered everybody together. We formed a full pilot network. And since then, have just continued to grow. We're up to 17 pilots now. And
okay, so now let's talk a little about how Lochner made the transition from a more informal consumer of drone data, like you described, to kind of the more comprehensive program that you have now that is a fully functional program with equipment and all that kind of stuff. So talk a little bit about that process, how the buy-in of management went down and the ROI and all those kind of conversations.
Yeah. So, you know, in the early days, as kind of mentioned, we were all just individuals personally interested in this. So I would say it's been about 2 years ago now, there were three or four of us that got together, decided we wanted to try to formalize this, to grow this service. So we ended up meeting with corporate. I think it was mutual. Our corporate leadership were also interested in how we could apply this. So we got together and started to try to form the vision, like what would it take, what kind of equipment, how many pilots, but as well as what it would mean for the company, how we wanted it to work. Is it going to be a service line or just a committee to advise offices? So I would 2 years ago we formed a small committee, three or four of us. We got together, we lined out, you know, safety operation, a flight operations manual,
right,
and kind of what it would take for Lochner, the equipment wise, personnel wise, to do certain tasks, take on certain services. So,
well, let me jump in there. So in that initial, what type of equipment were you asking for? Because again, when you're doing an ROI, mm-hmm. you know, usually the easy side of that equation is the cost to go out, right? Because you can quantify equipment costs, this amount of dollars, you want this training that costs this amount of dollars. So that side is easy, right? And we're going to, so let's start on that though. And okay. then we'll get on the other side of the equal signs. But what did you, what was the initial ask for? What type of equipment and people and that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So at the time we were all flying like Phantom 4 Pros. I had a Mavic Air 2 that I was using a lot. It was all very prosumer type, if you will. Yeah. So we explored everything at the start. So what would it mean to get into the fixed wing vertical takeoff? Do we need to do LiDAR? Do we need to do thermal? Everything was on the table to start. We left it open and then felt it out, all worked together to see which path forward. So we did settle on enterprise level. So we kind of wanted to get a couple test cases going. So, you know, we went with a Matrice 300 with a P1 sensor and L1 sensor. We didn't know if we were going to be able to use LiDAR, but we wanted to test it out.
Right.
As well as at the time the Mavic 3 Enterprise had been coming out. So we got one of those to see, you know, how that would compare, enable some pilots. So we kind of eliminated some things. We decided maybe fixed wing is a little too much right now. We'll cross that bridge later. Thermal was a totally different skill set. We pushed that off till later, and those kind of items. So
yeah. Well, okay. So I gotcha. That all makes sense on that side of the equation. It sounds like from a training point of view, you bought some equipment and probably did that the training in-house, maybe leveraged some of the vendors that you bought it from, that sort of thing. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. So, all right. So that's one side of the ROI of what the investment side. What was the sell to management of the value you would get back? You know, how were you able to quantify that? What were the specific items? Again, that part's a little fuzzier, right? So how are you able to sell that?
Yeah, I think that side of it's also talking about being a little bit unique on how we got started. You know, for Lochner being in this space, we don't have a survey service. We don't have PLSs on staff like some of our competitors. So, you know, in doing market research, we saw competitors that had drone programs primarily used them for geospatial and survey services. So we had to get a little, or it felt like it was a more creative exercise of, you're talking about that direct ROI of, okay, we're going to get these in play, but what are some are there standalone options we want to pursue, or is this more support our existing services? And that's where we get the return on investment. So we really leaned into supporting our existing line of services that we provided for clients. So enhancing our public involvement, enhancing communication tools. So, you know, immediately we started saying, every time you go on a site visit, take these drones out, get aerial photo and video, not just ground photography. And that immediately started paying off. You know, we're not too large of a firm, but, you know, we are still nationwide. So we have a pretty big footprint. So for a few personnel to go on site, but then have all of these enhanced photo and video media files, that just really immediately enhanced the project team coordination while we were trying to come up with solutions for our clients. And then we could take these photos and videos into the meetings and have a much clearer representation of what's going on. So that was an immediate return on the investment as far as supporting our partnership with the clients we're already working with. So that's really, really leaned into.
Yeah. So, and that's one of those things that it's really hard to quantify, you know, the value of improvements to communications, especially with clients and being able to communicate your ideas and as-built conditions with clients. So it's hard to say, like, if I have this image, it will generate XYZ dollars, right? But that's not to say that, you know, anyone will say that being able to impress clients, show clients that you're on the leading edge of technologies, communicate better with your partners, doesn't have enormous value. And so, and a lot of times people will say, including in management, that communication is the number one thing that we fail on, you know, and it's a source of a lot of the issues that we have. And so if you, even though it's hard to quantify the value, anything that improves that number one pain point, you know, pays dividends. And especially if the equipment doesn't cost that much. I mean, you mentioned several things, the Phantom 4 and the Mavic 3 and the L1 and all. I mean, there's dollars associated with it. But if you look at in scale of a large company like Lochner, it's not a huge investment. I did want to dive into a little bit of something you mentioned, because you started off with, I know you have more now, but you started off with a relatively few number of pilots, but you're a nationwide firm. You know, literally, I mean, I think in the intro I mentioned four cities, literally, because they're on the four corners of the country and everything in between. initially, did the pilots kind of, were they local to their specific office and provide services there? Or if you, or did they travel? If there was an office that needed a drone service but didn't have a pilot, would you go and help that that cousin office or something like that? Can you talk through that arrangement?
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. The, you know, a few, like I said, 2-3 years ago, we had formed a small committee of 3 or 4. There were more remote pilots out there that we just hadn't, we hadn't tapped in yet. So once we kind of got a direction with corporate leadership and where we wanted to go, we cast the net out to everybody of who out here has already been flying as a hobbyist, who's got their remote pilot certification. At the time, I believe we had 10 or 11 remote pilots who responded back and got back in touch. They were providing or trying to start providing services locally. So we do have one thing that really helped is we do have an aviation planning and engineering sector, right, that's focused in the Midwest. So of those 10 initial pilots, 7 of them were there already in the aviation section. And with their projects, the FAA requires before and after aerial photos from the drone. So that already kind of built in. They were already building out, getting some pilots. So we were able to leverage that and plug in all of us non-aviation folks into that equation. So our model is still very much local market focused. So as a group, we try to help advise offices and pilots and support each other with remote things we can do. But you know, most of the cost associated with these services is going to end up being the travel to the site for most of it. I mean, what we're finding to conduct the flight itself, there may be other processing after, but so we have been from the beginning, still are. If we really want to grow in a market, then we don't have a pilot. The first thing is to find somebody who wants to learn and get certified at that office. So I've done a little traveling regionally just to help get an office started, but it's still, we're leaning on the local market to find a champion to carry it.
So now I was going to kind of ask a little bit about that too. So your model, it sounds like, and correct me if I'm misunderstanding, is kind of a little bit of a federalist model where you have a central committee, and you had mentioned that that central group, especially early on, developed your SOPs, and you probably have some standardized forms and things like that to support the group. But largely, it's the individual offices that we'll train the pilot in command. We'll train a champion. There'll be some champion there. That office will buy their own equipment and kind of take care of their own clients locally. So you've got some corporate or corporate support, but largely it's a region by region administration of your U.S. program. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Everybody that's involved right now is very much a kind of a secondary role to what they've either been hired on or been doing for Lochner. So like myself, I'm a roadway designer training to be a project manager, but this is something I'm passionate about, and I've been fortunately have been given the support to take this on as a kind of a side mission, a separate focus. So that's, and that's how it is across Lochner Base. And that's another reason why we don't have people traveling too far. They have obligations locally. And so far as where we haven't built up a separate service line for using UAS yet. Like I said, we're still just trying to support what we already do well for our clients with this technology the best we can.
Yeah. So, and that reminded me of something that you had mentioned to me prior to this call, was that a challenge that you have seen is that in your world, your innovators are using new tools. In this case, we're talking about drones to do their jobs better, faster, safer, and cheaper. And they, they get all these skills and knowledge and whatnot, but then they start getting promoted, where before they might've been a lower level management and they're the ones collecting the data and they're using it and they're doing all these good things, but then they get kind of promoted out of that. And that makes perfect sense to me, because the type of person that is innovative and looking for new tools and to be more efficient, those same traits also lead to rapid advancement. So I totally see that correlation, but I just hadn't put it together. So how, can you talk a little about that challenge that you have seen, and what do you do to combat that?
Yeah, it's an ongoing focus of ours to make sure we're setting up offices that have supported local employees to get involved with this and take on the equipment, learn how to provide, you know, provide the services to their clients. Like you said, when we, you know, when we started, I would say most of us were that 6 or 7 years of experience in the industry level, just by nature of, you know, we're starting to get a little confidence a little bit in what we're doing. We're getting our feet under us, but we're also excited. We're looking for new ways to innovate. And so a lot of us now, from where we started, we're hitting 10, 11, 12 years. And in consulting, that usually means you're kind of getting considered for project management if that's a path you want. So we didn't catch that initially. We didn't expect that, but it's I'd say the last 6 months or so, we're trying to really boost our efforts to recruit some younger staff to get involved as well. So it's just an ongoing thing that we're going to have to play as we go.
Yeah, no, and it makes perfect sense. And I think you mentioned the way to address it. I don't know much other way to do it, but you basically bring someone on as an apprentice, you know, as you know, you get to pick someone who's interested in it and would be a good fit, bring them in on some missions, start them off. I mean, as you said, you guys are not full-time pilots. You have other responsibilities, and this is just something that goes to support it. So that makes all the sense in the world. Well, in the last, you know, kind of a couple of minutes that we have left of the call here, you know, you guys have built a very successful program, and the audience on this pod are going to have a wide range of backgrounds. I mean, you might have some engineers on here as well, but the vast majority will be people from a municipality or another company, or, you know, a police agency or whatever it happens to be. And they're looking to start up a drone program. If they're listening to this, they probably have been sold the value and they're interested, but they're, you know, maybe facing some of the challenges that you described a few years back with your, you know, your initial innovators. So with that kind of as a backdrop, what advice would you give someone who is looking to bring drone technology into their company or their agency or their cabinet, whatever it happens to be, to stand up a drone program? So what advice would you give on how to start and kind of ensure some success beyond the initial steps?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. You know, I think my takeaways from our experience here has been just start wherever you can and with whatever you can. So if you're kind of, if where you're working is a little hesitant to do the investment, but you're really wanting to go for it, go pick up a $500 drone and just bring it with you to what you're already doing. So that's how we started. I started off with a Mavic Mini as my first personal drone. We went out to a site visit on a project we were excited to have opened up. And I flew around the Mavic Mini and got some nice video and photos and just showed, that was one of the first ways I started. It's hard to, I would say the benefit is in that is you can own it. So if you did that flight, it's going to mean so much more to who you're working with than trying to go out on the internet and research and use other people's examples.
Right.
That's great. That's great for research to figure out where you could go. But I think the biggest thing for us that helped us start is we just started. You gotta, if you have your own media you can show or your own deliverable, I think that goes further with who you're trying to sell this to.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think to your point, if you show some cool videos of something that of some place that your boss is not familiar with, you know, you can do anything out there in the, you know, in the digital world, right? But if you make a model, for example, of your office or their car or the site that they're on or whatever it happens to be, it's more real and it's not fictitious. This, you know, the wheels start to turn about how we can use this tool that someone did, you know, that was maybe not supported by the company, but look at what they did as kind of a side project. Imagine what we could do if we invest in it, you know. The one thing, of course, being the educator in the room, I'll say always make sure if you're going to do that, make sure you get your Part 107 license, right? You don't want to do anything that are outside the rules. But right after you get the Part 107, get that Mavic Mini or whatever it happens to be to start collecting real data on that. So, well, Tyler, this has been really, really great. I really appreciate you carving out some time to share your experience with Lochner and everything that you've been doing. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap things up. Thanks again for being on the show. And is there anything that we missed or should have talked about before we do kind of close things up?
I think we got it all covered, Joe. Again, I appreciate the opportunity. Like we kind of said before, when I was getting started, I kind of cut my teeth on podcasts and YouTube channels similar to this, just anything I could get my hands on while I was trying to learn what the industry could provide for us. So I appreciate the opportunity to kind of try to hopefully give back a little bit.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, thank you for that. And thank you all for listening to another episode of the Clemson Drone Podcast. Look forward to doing this again with you here soon. Thanks for listening to the Clemson Drone Podcast. Don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Learn more about our online training offerings by going to clemsondrone.com. Thanks again. And remember, a Clemson drone, the sky is not the limit. It's just the beginning.